Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in the cause of McAllen Methodist Hospital and United Blood Services versus Longoria.
May it please the court. This court has before it the first earliest case of a alleged blood-related transfusion of any appellate court decision in the United States at the present time. It occurred in 1982. As brought forth...
You mean this is the oldest in terms of when the liability fact occurred?
Yes, sir. This is before any of the other decisions that are reported in the country, that being the Kosup case, the McKee versus Miles case, the Kirkendall case, the Shelby case, or the Doe case. This is the earliest case, July of 1982. We brought forth in facts in our affidavits to the trial court indicating at the time that there was a standard of care of no testing for AIDS in the medical community in 1982. This was because in 1982 it was not known, as addressed in the affidavits of Dr. Langley, Dr. Mottam, and Mr. Hange, that any blood-related diseases, such as AIDS, was resulting from transfusion. It was not known that AIDS was transmitted by transfusion. And effectively, there was no standard to test the bloods for AIDS-related problems. This is a professional malpractice case, which is a different standard than a regular negligence case. The standard is effectively that of what is the standard of care, which is addressed first in the medical malpractice case. The affidavits that we brought forth effectively said that there was no standard of care to test for AIDS in 1982 because it was not known. Now the plaintiffs attempted to...
When was the AIDS virus identified?
If I understand the court's question, the AIDS virus, there was in December of 1982 the first discussion of three hemophiliac cases. That is addressed, I believe, in the affidavit of Dr. Milam. In 1983, that was when screening began, in April of 1983, because there was some concern about high-risk groups. But it was not until 1984 that there was any consensus reached, which is addressed in the affidavit of Dr. Milam, about a AIDS virus being transmitted by blood. And it was not until 1985, in June of 1985, that testing was brought forth in order to determine whether or not the AIDS virus was
international,
present.
Are you talking about the international medical community consensus or local consensus? What are you talking
about? Your Honor, I am talking about an international medical community consensus. Effectively, the plaintiffs then attempted to bring forth, in addressing our affidavits by Dr. Hangley, Milam, and Langley, the affidavit of a Dr. Kramer who has a PhD in environmental health. His affidavit, in looking at it, we feel did not present any evidence with regards to a standard of care for testing of AIDS. It did not discuss the subject, did not state that there was any standard of testing in 1982 in nationwide or in Hidalgo County. He attempted to discuss that there was a duty to test the blood for CMV or a duty to screen the blood for CMV or a duty to screen the blood for other infectious diseases. He did never address in his affidavit that there was any standard of care of doing that. He never rebutted the standard of care brought forth by the petitioner in their affidavit that the court granted the summary judgment on. Nor did he rebut a local standard of care. And effectively, what Dr. Kramer presented in his affidavit is the same sort of approach that was attempted in the COSAP case, in the McKee case, and that is a one-person opinion, a hindsight view in attempting to supplant the medical community field of what the standard of care is.
In your brief, both you and Blood Services emphasized there was no statement about a local standard of care. Do you think we need to address that issue in reviewing Dr. Kramer's affidavit?
I think that Dr. Kramer definitely needed to address what the standard of care was because he never rebutted it. He never rebutted it on a local measure.
Are you saying the geographical? Well, I think you're about to answer my question.
He never rebutted it on a nationwide, nor did he ever rebut it in a local situation. Neither was addressed. And talking about the same situation, you end up with what is good medical practice versus what is customary medical practice. And I think this court has addressed that particular situation in Hood versus Phillips, when it basically stated that a medical practitioner cannot be liable for good and reasonable medical practice under the same and similar circumstances. And effectively, in that case, the court did not even address necessarily a locality rule, but addressed the difference between good medical practice and customary medical practice. And one person's opinion cannot supplant the entire medical field opinion. That is what was tried in the COSAP case when they alleged that there should have been core hepatitis testing. That is what was attempted with regards to the same opinion in the COSAP case with regards to screening. That was attempted what was in the Miles case versus McKee, which is where they said there should be heat treatment testing. And these were all later cases than the 1982 transfusion of blood into the plaintiff in this case.
If Dr. Kramer said it was a standard of care to test for the virus that he mentioned, would that have blocked the summary judgment?
I don't think it would have, because effectively, if you go on further with his affidavit in that case, he never correlates the fact that CMV and that she got CMV necessarily from AIDS. He never says that in the affidavit. He says that there may be some connection between the two, but he doesn't say what it is. So I don't think it would. I frankly think that the risk in 1982 was on foreseeable. It was something that was not known to the medical community in the field at that particular time.
What do you do when there is no standard? What do you got to prove up then?
Effectively, Your Honor, that is what we are saying, that the standard was to do exactly what we did, and that is not do any testing for this particular type of problem because it was not known, and the standard was, in fact, not to do anything. If the standard was then, as they contend, to do something, that was their obligation at that point in time, once we presented the affidavit, to bring forth evidence to state what the standard of care was, which they didn't do. It's an unusual situation because usually you do have something that is a standard of care. But in this particular time, under these particular set of circumstances, there effectively was not any sort of testing that was required or needed to be done in the community with regards to blood.
Did Dr. Kramer say in his affidavit that it was standard procedure or recommended procedure that the AIDS testing be done?
No, he did not.
In 1980. What did he say other than in hindsight there's a connection?
He basically said that they had a duty, which is a legal concept, a duty to test for CMV, or if the hospital did not test, if the blood bank did not test for screen, then the hospital should have done it. Which is a completely different subject than the AIDS virus.
You said that they did no testing. Is that what you meant? There was no kind of test for anything? Was this just the raw blood that was used, rather than it was not tested for any of the known problems that might exist in blood?
Our affidavit addresses that there were 18 pints of blood obtained from United Blood Services. Our affidavit further states that it was customary for the hospital to rely on United Blood Service, which is where we obtained all the blood from, to do all the testing on the blood that was required, that was received by us.
And United Blood Testing did test this blood for the things that were known as the standard tests that were known and available at that time?
Your Honor, that is what they basically stated, that they've done what they felt that they needed to do in their affidavit.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Just so the court is completely clear, we're not standing up here saying that today we have no duty to do these things. We've had a duty for a long time. Our position is simply that at the time of these transfusions, we had no duty because there was no foreseeability. And this court has held that foreseeability is an element of duty. The AIDS virus, Justice Hightower, was not identified until December of 84, and our transfusions were early July of 1982. In fact, we believe there was a duty on blood banks and hospitals to screen beginning in April of 1983. That's based on the publication in March of that year, late March, of a joint statement by virtually a who's who on the issue of AIDS that said it looks as if it is possible AIDS is transmitted through the blood. And once that was published, hospitals and blood banks began implementing screening tests. There was, however, no test for AIDS to identify the virus until May of 85, and we believe a duty arose roughly June of 85. In fact, the Shelby case out of Houston, a federal court decision, has held that because there was an implementation period while kits became available.
By screening, you mean screening donors?
Screening is screening donors, and testing is actually testing the blood.
So what test did you perform on this blood?
The record does not reflect anything at all, Your Honor, about that. The reason being that the pleadings concerned only AIDS, so we addressed our proof solely to AIDS.
Well, I mean, Dr. Kramer talked about AIDS, should test for hepatitis C and B and all that, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
But there's no record as to whether that was even done.
There is no record on that. CMV was, it's obvious, was not tested for. It's not that I'm going outside the record. It's simply that other cases have discussed this issue. And they point out that there was no recommendation by any entity, the Joint Association of Blood Banks, or any group, saying that you should do this sort of testing, the surrogate testing theory, where you test for one thing in hopes of screening out somebody who may have a different disease. Nobody did that. The FDA, to this day, has never licensed such surrogate testing. That's just not done in the industry. So I think we can assume it was not done in our case as well. The reason we didn't deal with the CMV issue is quite simply it was not raised in the pleadings. And I think what we have here is a classic Clear Creek sort of case where the movement was trying to put on evidence to get a summary judgment and the respondent was lying behind the log. CMV is never mentioned in the pleadings. In fact, there was no response timely filed to the motion for summary judgment. Simply an affidavit was filed, and it's Kramer's affidavit about CMV. We objected to that.
Why would this be the kind of matter that you had to plead?
Well, because it's a whole different theory or cause of action. I mean, it's a totally unrelated disease.
Couldn't you plead a cause of action broadly enough though? It would encompass both of them.
In theory, you could, but it was not done in this case. The pleadings are clear that they were talking only about AIDS. If you're asking about fair notice of pleadings, there's no fair notice of anything else being involved for us to address. And in reality, the CMV is a false issue in the case. Kramer is not a medical doctor, so he cannot make a diagnosis that the little girl had CMV. He says he is reviewing some medical records, not all, in reaching that conclusion of his. But we point out the records in the transcript make no mention of CMV. What he is relying on is something outside of the evidence. He does not say in his affidavit it's materials that experts reasonably rely upon. And of course, even if he said that, it would not be proof of the fact that she had CMV. It would just be the basis of his opinion. So,
well, if it was proper, if he were a proper expert and it was the kind of materials that experts normally relied on, et cetera, wouldn't that, that would be a fact issue?
Yes, if he were those two things, which we say he was not. The CMV testing, we think, is classic Clear Creek that, you know, they were forcing us to play spot the issue. We file an affidavit, and you, the movement, now have to figure out what issues may be raised by that affidavit. This court said that's not proper, and I think that's a good rule. If anything, Clear Creek perhaps did not go far enough in making people respond. I frankly don't see what the harm would be in having a rule, even in a red light swearing match, that if one side files an affidavit saying my light was green, that there's a burden on the other side to file an affidavit saying no, my light was green. I don't see that that would be a problem. So Clear Creek at present does not go that far. It says there's a fact issue because of credibility there. But even under the current status of Clear Creek, Kramer's affidavit did not meet that test.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Arroyo will present arguments for respondents.
May it please the court. Morning. This little girl, at the time she died, had two blood transfusion-associated diseases, AIDS and CMV. And until we got Kramer's affidavit, I'd never heard of CMV, cytomegalovirus. And it's the other experts who looked at the records didn't say anything about having CMV. That makes this case different from every other case that has been cited, because this is the only case that has two conditions that may have been picked up by this little girl from blood.
What about his contention that CMV wasn't raised in the trial court?
It was raised by Dr. Kramer's affidavit, and the judge in the trial court at page 294 of the transcript filed an order saying that he was considering that allowing the filing of Dr. Kramer's affidavit and stating that he was taking everything there into consideration in granting summary judgment.
Why didn't you have to amend your pleadings once you found out about this disease?
We were already into the deadline for summary judgment, but pleadings, as I understand it, the law and the Court of Appeals address that issue, that if the summary judgment evidence raises any other causes of action, that has to be taken into consideration, regardless of the status of the pleadings. And
so
in fact,
you think the law is if it's not raised in the pleadings and it's not raised in the motion of response, as long as it's raised in the summary judgment record somewhere, that that's an issue to be decided in the motion procedure?
Yes, sir, and particularly where the court particularly enters an order saying you're taking that particular affidavit into consideration.
Why doesn't that fly in the face of Clear Creek, as your opponents have argued, that you got to specify what the issues are rather than playing hide and seek through the record?
Well, in our response, which is at page 274, we brought up the CMV issue, that Dr. Kramer brought that out. Additionally, you know, the thing about Clear Creek is that it seems to be aimed at the sufficiency of the summary judgment evidence and says particularly that pleadings are not to be considered in summary judgment evidence.
Not to be considered as evidence.
Yes, sir. So, the I'd like to just read real quickly from the Texarkana decision, Hammonds versus Thomas. The threshold question in a medical malpractice case is the standard of care. That standard must first be established so that the fact finder can determine if the doctor's conduct deviated from the standard. The moving parties in summary judgment have the obligation to establish the standard of care. In this case, they want to use the Article 4590I and 77.004 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, 4590I being, of course, the malpractice, medical malpractice statute, and 77.004 being the blood bank statute. But nowhere in, well, I'd like to argue three reasons why I think they have failed to establish the standard of care on their own, regardless of what we put in. And Clear Creek makes it clear that that is what their, that it's their burden to establish it, regardless of what the respondent has brought forward. The first reason is that they have failed to show that they're licensed. And this is something that, I ran into in briefing for this court. It hadn't been brought up before at all. But it's their burden to show the standard. If they want to show, if they're saying that the standard is 4590I, then they've got to show that they fall under 4590I. And in order to do that, they have to show that they're a licensed hospital. If the blood bank wants to claim the benefits of 77.004, then it has to show that it's licensed by either the National Institute of Health or the American Association of Blood Banks, because those are the only blood banks that are entitled to protection of 77.004. There's nothing in the record that is summary judgment evidence that says that they're licensed in that way. And so we feel that they have not met the standard. They have not shown that they're entitled to the standard under those statutes. The second reason why I think they have failed to meet the standard of to establish the standard of care is that their affidavits are conclusionary. And the biggest problem, I think, is what the Chief Justice brought out, that there's nothing in the record about the screening or about the CMV. There are no records from the blood bank as to what screening was done. And none of the affidavits say that anybody has seen those records.
Did you file a motion for summary judgment?
No, I didn't, Your Honor.
I thought you had, but
There's no question that there was not a test for AIDS in 1982. You know, it was in 1982 that the first suspicions came about around that, AIDS was being transmitted through blood transfusions. So there was no test. There is no way they could have tested for AIDS. But there was screening at the time. And one of the things that I found yesterday, going through the record, at page 236, there's answers to interrogatories. These are sworn to by United Blood Services. This is number 12 on page 236. Please state what federal law or regulations United Blood Services complied with in the screening procedure for blood donors prior to August 1st, 1982, and the answer was 21 CFR, part 600 to 680. So here, they have brought out the fact in their answers to interrogatories that the screening has to be done not in accordance with the industry standard, but in accordance with federal regulations, 21 CFR, which I have in my brief. I think they're the last exhibit on there. So all of their affidavits state that they have to comply with the industry standard. But when there is a statute, and as I understand, federal regulations carry the force of statutes, when there is a statute that sets a standard, then they have to comply with that statute and not with the standard in the industry. The statutes required screening, and that's what their answer to interrogatories is.
Counsel, excuse me, what's the difference in testing and screening? I spend a lot of time in hospitals, but it's a vent on my back, and I don't know the difference.
As I understand it, Judge, and there's a bunch of on it in those regulations, but screening is trying to screen out donors who are risky.
What's the difference in that and testing?
Testing is actual tests that they do on the blood.
Well, how do you screen without testing?
They ask,
look at them?
You know, they take their temperature. They take a look at them. They ask them a bunch of questions. They try to, you know, if these are people with a bunch of open sores, and obviously, one of the things that Kramer says is you have the same people who are risky for CMV as for AIDS, and he says, and these are homosexuals. I think, you know, with derelict, which
drug
may
addicts.
Be a fair representation, sir.
Drug addicts.
The people with, you know, with a bunch of needle marks in their arms. Groups of that sort. And one of the points that Kramer makes is if they had been properly screened for CMV, they would probably have screened out the same people who are high risk for AIDS.
Are there any causation problems or proximate cause problems?
Well, I don't think so, but I'd like to address that.
Foreseeability issue be raised.
That's, you know, that's the question. I cited one case from this court, Hobson versus Guilford, and an ALR article. And there, I found a number of other cases, Texas cases, Tier versus Weingarten, Southwest Veal versus Shoals, and Milam versus Langford. And I, in fact, Mr. Chief Justice, I'd like to, if it's allowed, to submit a letter just setting those cases out.
You may do so. Can you do that in a week?
Yes, sir.
About 3 days.
I'll do it. But all of these cases state, in fact, let me quote from this court's decision. Find it. And it's talking specifically on the foreseeability issue, that it isn't the foreseeability of the exact thing that occurs, but the foreseeability of a hazard or a danger. And this is from Hobson versus Gulf Oil. It is sufficient that the defendant would reasonably have anticipated consequences or an injury or the general nature of that which ensued. And these other cases all, you know, these are all arguments where the defendant is saying, well, you know, we did it, but we didn't know that that was going to happen. And
how can they test for something that they don't know the etiology of and that there's no test to find out?
They can't. I think
but
testing.
You're saying, aren't you, that they have the duty?
No, I think we're saying that the screening issue has not been addressed in the summary judgment evidence.
What would the screening do that the testing wouldn't do?
The screen, and here.
I'm not clear on that.
Okay.
How could they know to test for something they don't know what's caused by it or its etiology? When they don't know anything about the disease or where it comes from and didn't know until after this happened?
They do know about CMV. That's been around. And attached to Kramer's affidavit is a bibliography of articles. It's at...
Let me ask you one quick question. Are you suing, although it's not in your pleading, separately for the damages for CMV, for her contracting that, which along with the AIDS,
it,
are you saying because they didn't test for CMV, which would have shown positive, which meant they wouldn't have given the blood, which meant she wouldn't have gotten AIDS, which she died from?
I'm not sure that that's the sequence that the only reason I'm saying that is because I'm not sure I understand the sequence myself.
Well, and that's
but,
the reason why Clear Creek requires the pleadings to something to put out the theory of the case by somebody doesn't know.
Kramer says in his affidavit that she died from AIDS and CMV. Would she? I think that she, there's a cause of action under either one or a combination of the two.
I understand you say that testing without this is your claim for late solely to screen, failure to screen?
Testing for AIDS is out. Yes, sir.
And
there was no test.
What was it that indicated to either the hospital or the blood bank that they needed to screen for CMV?
The knowledge in the industry, and that's in Kramer's affidavit, if I can read just a small part of that, the problem of contamination in and with blood and blood products existed and was known to the industry long before the discovery of AIDS. Studies have shown that as many as 10% of blood recipients contracted infectious diseases such as, and he goes on, it was not until the discovery of AIDS in the blood supply that the industry began taking the matter of transfusion-associated infections seriously.
Doesn't that negate the standard of care? Or is there something in the government code that could just do the...
That's the issue.
I mean, where do we get the... Where does the trial court find from this affidavit and from your summary judgment proof a duty apart from, I mean, this affidavit says they weren't doing something they should have been doing, which is not ordinarily in a case involving expertise like this, is not ordinarily enough to raise a fact issue. But you say it doesn't matter, the industry wasn't doing it, they had a duty under governmental regulations to do it.
Yes, sir.
And was that part of the summary judgment proof? It was in an answer to an interrogatory.
Yes.
Was that made part of the summary judgment proof?
Well, it's my understanding that answers to interrogatories are summary judgment proof because they're sworn to. And there is an answer to an interrogatory that is sworn to, which is that one that I read to the court, which is at page 236.
Well, I understand your theory is that is, in order for the blood bank to win, it has to prove that it's entitled to a judgment in its favor as a matter of law. And in order to get there, it has to prove that it complied with this code of federal regulations.
Yes.
And they didn't do that.
Yes, sir.
So therefore, they're not entitled to summary judgment.
Yes, sir.
Was the code of regulations raised in the trial court? When is the first time it surfaced in the lawsuit?
It's in the interrogatories, but other than that, it didn't surface until the Court of Appeals. I attached a copy of the CFR.
The purpose of Clear Creek was to keep the trial judge from having to search through all the evidence. Did you point that out to the trial court in either a written response or an oral argument or in any other way?
I didn't point specifically to the regulations.
How about
Kramer's?
How about general?
Let me try. I'll try. Kramer states in his affidavit that there were numerous government and industry studies prior to 1982 showing a great deal, the 10% that he talks about contamination. That's as close as we got in the trial court. But, you know, my question is, don't they have the obligation to prove the compliance with that standard? They've already said in interrogatories that they have to comply with that standard. But in their summary judgment evidence, they don't say, we complied with the regulations. I'm getting close to being out of time. This is a case where, you know, this little girl apparently survived the problems that she was born with, but didn't survive the cure. At least that is an issue in this case. The issues that have not been closed off, and that the respondents have failed to show are just purely issues of law, are one, the screening. We have nothing in this record as to what was done in the screening, but their answers to interrogatory state that there is screening. But there's no documents as to the screening. None of the experts say, we have seen the screening documents. We have seen the documents from United Blood Services. The screening was done properly. The proper questions were taken. The proper medical examination was made of the donors. There's nothing like that. There is not the showing by the respondents that that the hospital is a licensed hospital under 4590I. There is not the showing that the blood bank is a blood bank certified by either one of those two agencies.
Would they also have to put in their summary judgment proof that the med techs that took the blood were doctors working in the facility had a license to practice medicine?
I would think they might have to, because the regulations say that it all has to be done under the supervision of the physician.
How about an affidavit that also says that the hospital is in compliance with certain federal regulations or something like that?
We don't...
Doesn't that sound like defensive matters to you?
I think that they would have to raise that as a defense. That they have to raise their eligibility under 4590I.
I meant, so,
but they'd have to prove it before they could say I'm entitled to judgment as a matter of law.
I think they do. I think they have to. Otherwise, we have all these other causes of action.
Since that wasn't raised, well, how do they know what they're supposed to put in there? How about putting that they have a proper license from the city to operate the facility that they've got? Is that part of their summary judgment burden?
There is
a point I'm getting. What I'm saying is there's a point at which you don't have to allege facts that are uncontested, uncontroverted, not an issue, and nobody doubts anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
That would make you getting a summary judgment an absolute impossibility, because I can guarantee you that in 100% of the cases you can find some gap in the necessary steps in summary judgment proof that would be required to entitle one to a summary judgment. I'm just saying it seems a little inapposite for us to take some obscure fact about which there's no real controversy.
If this had to do with an engineer or an attorney or a truck driver, would they have to show the proper licensing? Does the hospital in a medical malpractice case have to, as they say, yes, we are a hospital properly licensed under the Texas statute?
I think Judge Pierce's point is, I mean, the affidavit says we're a blood bank, and the guy said I'm a blood bank. I'm the head of the blood bank, and I've been duly certified. And the hospital said we're a hospital. And the question is, if it's never been contested in the pleadings or any of the proof that there's a license in BTEC, should we impose that as part of the summary judgment burden on the move?
Well, I understand the point. That's of course I'm arguing that yes, you should, because it's part of their burden. This isn't just, did they have an easement to put a water line in? In order to come under that statute, they have to prove that they're properly licensed. That's part of proving the standard of care. They're entitled to the hospital standard under that statute.
So any fact that's necessary to get you a standard over and above the common standard to ordinary people, you should have to prove that fact.
That's yes, sir. I think that the standard is the first thing, as the Texarkana Court said, that's the first thing you've got to establish, that what's the standard and that you're entitled to it.
Are you making essentially the same argument concerning the compliance with the CFR provisions that you mentioned? You're not pointing to a specific section of the regulation that they violated, but you're saying that just as they had to prove they were a licensed hospital, they had to prove compliance with those regulations?
Yes.
Do you have a specific section of the regulations that you say, while understanding your argument that they had the burden, do you have a specific section that you're claiming that they didn't comply with?
No, because we got no records at the time that that this summary judgment was rendered. I had an outstanding motion to compel, where we had asked for their records as to each of the donors who were involved in this case. But that was pending at the time. In my motion for new trial, I brought that out, that should be a reason why the summary judgment should not have been granted. But there was never, we never got those records. Those records have not been reviewed by any of the experts. So there is that gap of the whole question of screening, whether it was done in accordance with the federal regulations. And federal regulations are very specific as to all of the things that have to be done in screening.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
The first thing I want to address is whether or not we have to raise the point that we were a hospital. In their pleadings, they particularly admit, Defendant McGowan Methodist Hospital is, and at all times mentioned herein, has been a private corporation organized and existing under the laws of the state of Texas as a hospital. They admitted we were a hospital. Effectively, that issue was not presented until we reached the Court of Appeals, and they were attempting to escape the standard of care, which they failed to present to the trial court. The next issue is they contend that there was some duty to screen because of CMV blood or test because of CMV. They've effectively admitted right here in court that there was no duty to test for AIDS. The hospital does not know who the blood donors are. We have no information concerning that. That is information that UBS has. Effectively, we have no duty to screen because of that theory, and they've admitted we have no duty to test. But talking about the CMV theory and their attempt to connect it up to AIDS, I'd like to point out to the court that on October 1st of 1986 was the date that Dr. Kramer filed his affidavit. There was no amendment of the pleadings for any information or pleading concerning the cause of action for contacting CMV, even though the summary judgment was not heard until November 16th of 1986. There was never a response timely filed with regards to CMV, but in looking at the response that was filed one day late, I'd like to read to the court what it says. The affidavit of Dr. Melvin Kramer, quote unquote, establishes that the industry was aware that the blood supply was contaminated and had blood donors been screened for non-A, non-B, hepatitis, and CMV. This little girl would have, in all probability, not have contacted AIDS. It does not say one word about contacting CMV or her death being caused by CMV or any injury being caused by CMV. Further reading Dr. Kramer's affidavit.
Well, if that's the case, if their case is purely CMV, is purely that she died from AIDS, then why would the pleadings have to have a factual allegation, that is, testing for CMV, which would have caused this blood, which caused AIDS, not to be?
Because they are attempting to somehow create a cause of action of a separate injury apart from AIDS. Because the same theory...
Well, I think based on what you just read, the injury is AIDS.
The injury is clearly...
There's a duty to do something. This seems to me to be very, very close to the case we had last year, King versus Ashot Ashcourt, and also not too far apart from Edwards versus... Judge Heck, you wrote it in the Court of Appeals.
Brown Transfer.
Yeah. In Keene, the guy was not supposed to go near the truck because it might fall on him because the load was imbalanced. He went near the truck anyway, and it fell on him because there was a defect in what the truck was standing up on. Now, how is that really different from the fact issue which they're attempting to raise here? That they shouldn't have given the blood because it could have been screened for one disease, and in fact, since it wasn't screened for that disease, they gave it and it caused another disease, which is fatal.
I think it differs in the fact that there are attempting to say that there was a duty to screen for this particular disease, whereas this is a standard of care case, and the industry standard was not to screen for particularly that disease. Dr. Kramer...
Was there a standard in the government regulations regarding screening for CMV?
No. And I don't think the government regulations were timely adopted. I want to further mention to the court, and I see my lights coming on, that...
Well, it's more a blood bank problem.
Dr. Kramer's affidavit further states that... doesn't state that she had CMV from the transfusion. It states that CMV can be a transfusion-associated infection. It further states that Juanita Longoria would have received her CMV infection and or infection, which subsequently caused her death from AIDS. It is clear her death was caused, an injury caused from AIDS. CMV is a collateral issue and effectively the same sort of theory about testing that was raised in the cases I addressed earlier.
Isn't the point if they had tested and found CMV, they would not have used the blood that could also have contained the AIDS virus?
No one knew that AIDS was even associated with
it. I'm talking about AIDS. I'm talking about CMV.
Now, I'm going outside the record for this, to answer this question. But from my understanding about CMV, it is something that does not come from, it is not that serious. It is something that a person can pick up an infection. It is not necessarily the same sort of thing that one would automatically
screen
for.
If the blood had been tested and had been found to contain the CMV virus, would that blood have been used to transfuse this little girl?
I can't really particularly answer that question. I do not know that.
All right. If it had been, would that have been a violation of your standard of care?
If it had been,
standard of care.
If it had been
tested and you had discovered it had CMV and then you had still used that blood to transfuse this girl, would that have been a violation of your standard of care?
If effectively that was what the standard was at the time, and that is not addressed in any of the affidavit of Dr. Kramer.
You don't think that's covered by this the blood bank's answer to the interrogatories that said that the federal regulations require it?
Those federal regulations were not brought to the attention of the trial court. The first time they were really raised was in the Court of Appeals. They were not mentioned.
Well, does that federal regulation require that kind of testing?
With regard, from my understanding, it does not particularly require CMV to be tested. I think it only, and I'm going outside the record, I think it only requires to be tested for women, and particularly with the doctor's orders for testing for that. And I'm outside the record.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I just want to make four very quick points. Federal regulations don't talk about CMV, have nothing to do with CMV. Our affidavit said that we met the standard of care. They didn't object to our affidavit saying that some federal regulation imposes some other standard. Federal regulations have nothing to do with this case.
And tell us your answer does not say that you did comply with...
Our answer says that, but that was not a part of the summary judgment proof. You know, maybe I'm under a misimpression. You know, I thought we had rules of procedure that lay out what a party's burden is on summary judgment and what the other party's burden is to respond and what has to be points of error on appeal and what doesn't. For example, he stands up here and says, well, I didn't get to do my discovery. He doesn't tell you that they postponed the hearing a couple of times. He doesn't raise a point of error that he was denied discovery. I mean, are we enforcing the rules or not? I feel like we're in the position of trying to enforce some technicality while he plays to the sympathy of the court. And the truth of the matter is that all he is saying is false. I mean, maybe you need to get an amicus brief from some doctor's association about CMV, because when you learn the truth about CMV, if you write an opinion saying we're concerned about the CMV and we're sending it down for a new trial, the medical community is going to laugh about you. And we didn't have a chance to put on it.
We're just going to send it back for a trial, not a new trial. There hadn't been a trial in this case.
The summary judgment's a trial. That's why I filed a motion for new trial, Your Honor.
No jury's been allowed to pass on it.
No jury's been allowed to pass on it. That's the purpose of summary judgment, to get rid of claims that cannot go to a jury, that won't waste a jury's time.
A denied jury trial, that's correct.
That's right. And CMV is not going to be an issue if you know the truth. And we could have put the truth in the record, but we didn't know CMV was an issue in the case. So now we're in a difficult situation. I would love to stand here and tell you all about CMV, but I can't do it because it's not in the record. And it's not in the record because I didn't know it was going to be an issue in the case. But I'm just cautioning the court that before you do an opinion that goes to some extreme about CMV, you may want to solicit some kind of amicus help from a medical association.
Well, let me ask you a question that I asked the opposing counsel, and that is, explain to me why it's not your burden of proof in the summary judgment proceeding to show that you have in fact complied with all the regulations.
We have an affidavit that says we've met the standard of care. We think that does it unless he puts on counterproof. Okay. With regard to the same thing on the license, of course, the hospital's got an affidavit in the file that says that we are licensed, so there is proof in the summary judgment record we're licensed. License, all that does is if you're licensed, all they can sue us for is negligence. If you're not licensed, they get strict liability. PMC for strict liability, pleadings, every single paragraph says negligence, negligence, negligence. Licensing has nothing to do with the case.
Have you given all four of your points?
Probably given more than that, Judge. Yes, sir, I have.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The foregoing cases are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. Business of the court for the day is concluded, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
Right, Mr. Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. Honorable Supreme Court of Texas, nothing adjourned, subject.